Welcome back to episode 30 of the Talking Physio podcast. This week, all three of us are going to be discussing the differences between working in an NHS setting, private setting, and a sporting setting. What it's like, the different hours and things that you work, what your caseload's like, how complex are the patients, and what different types of complexity do we each encounter in our roles. The time you actually get with patients and the time that we spend doing admin, who else we work with in these roles, and how long we pretty much get to do everything and how it's all balanced out. So you get a look into each of our lives at the moment.
Before we begin, I would like to give a quick shout out to our sponsors at Neonic Training Solutions. Neonic is based in Shipley, West Yorkshire, and operates as a student-led physiotherapy clinic. Neonic provides placement opportunities for a range of healthcare students and not just physios, offering independent but supported patient contact coupled with excellent learning opportunities. Their range of placements are designed to elevate your proficiency in clinical practice and foster confidence in your professional journey. This is a fantastic placement opportunity for all healthcare students. If you're intrigued, reach out to your university's placement lead as Neonic collaborate with universities nationwide. Or if you're considering an elective, you can always go direct.
So lads, if we talk about sort of the schedule and our shifts and working hours, obviously it's going to be very different. So Lewis, we'll start with you, because working in private, you work in quite a few range of different hours, aren't you? But you've got more of a schedule, I guess.
Yeah, so I work Monday to Friday. So Mondays and Wednesdays I do 20 past 8 to 20 past 4. On a Tuesday I do a 9 to 7. So we kind of have it that there'll be one physio Monday to Thursday that I'll do a slightly later finish. So I do a later finish on a Tuesday, so I do 9 to 7 on a Tuesday, and then Thursday I do 10 to 8, and then Friday I work 8 to 12, so pretty varied. I kind of like it the way it is like that, because I feel like once you get to your Monday and Wednesday nearly feels like a half day, because you're working slightly later on the two longer days. So you get to Wednesday and you're like, well, I only have a day and a half left. So each week is pretty rapid. The reason generally why we've got the longer shifts are to accommodate for the classes that we run. So on a Thursday evening we run a lower limb rehab class for our sort of long-term rehabbers, your SCLs, your meniscus, your patella dislocations, and then we kind of mix them in with some of the patients that we've got with PORS. And those kind of longer term niggly rehabbers that could just do with a little bit of supervision. And that's generally my working week.
Cool. Yeah. My working week is Monday to Monday. a lot more varied. So typically I'd be in on a Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, and a Saturday. Games can be on different days, but normally it would be on a Tuesday and a Saturday for the YDP, PDP. So what I mean by that is you're 14, under 14 and upwards. In terms of working hours, yeah, again, that varies hugely. At the moment, we're very busy. We've got lots of injuries. Therefore, the hours are going to be longer. The less injuries, then obviously the shorter it's going to be. Typically, you'd be there whenever the lads are there, and if they, you know, have a session or they have a double session, that means that your day is slightly longer. In terms of things that happen throughout the day, obviously you've got lots of things to work around. So for example, first team is the primary thing, so academy is sort of second fiddle to that. So for example, if you've got one gym space, then you'd have to work around the timings for when the first team are in the gym, so that might delay your day. But yeah, typically it'd be, you know, a morning and evening working pattern, so you'd either be up early and then finishing sort of early, so starting at 8, injuries reporting for 8, and then you finish perhaps half 4 on an average, and then an evening training would be sort of 5:15 till 8:45, so you'd be in early enough to prep for that and then locking up the building afterwards. And then a match day, is that depends on the kickoff time, so kickoffs most of the time 10:30 on a Saturday morning, So, you know, up early, travelling if you're in an away game, and then getting back sort of early afternoon for that. So I think that gives a bit of a brief overview. Brad, did you want to give us an idea of your NHS working
path? Yeah, so I think what rotation you're on really dictates this. So in MSK, we did 3 8-till-4 days and then 2 10-till-6 days. And this was just because a few patients, they work. So if they're coming at 4:30 or 5, you've got appointments to meet those. And we'd have quite a few people in doing those days. And it would be Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday that we offered the later appointments. Not on Mondays, luckily. That was also for our classes as well. So I think we had an ACL class and we had like a back and a shoulder pain class, which were kind of our main areas in the NHS. Community has been very nice. It's been 8-till-4 every day. And because you're commuting around, you've got a bit more freedom about how you plan your day or where you end up. So that's been quite nice, although traffic is always traffic. I'm moving to respiratory soon, so that has weekend working in. So it'll be, I think it's two or three days every month you need to do the weekend, and that's just rotated. However the team leader does it, I think you can negotiate and ask how you want it to be. If you've got certain things on certain days, and then you get a day back for that. So if you work a Saturday, you get a day back on the previous week. If you work a Sunday, you get a day back on the following week. So could be whatever day. I think you have quite a lot of say around what day it is as well. So if you've got a thing coming up midweek, you can plan it around that, which is quite nice. Working hours generally, you're 8-till-4 standard. And then unless you're on call, then that's four p.m. till 8 a.m. sort of do. So if you just finish your shift, you're still working. But yeah, I think that's generally the working hours in the NHS. Obviously changes depending on rotation. But yeah, as a general.
Yeah, I didn't touch on the working hours. It varies. So even if you're not in, you're still kind of working because you're either planning a rehab or you're messaging a player to see how they are, or that it's, you kind of in sport, you never really kind of switch off. We try your best to, but it's quite constant in that sense. So I guess how that varies from when I worked clinically at Ascenti, you know, you're effectively leaving work at work, whereas in sport you have to naturally let that, you know, spill over into your home life. Otherwise you wouldn't ever respond to any messages in preparation for the next day, for example. Or check up on a player who was injured on a Saturday and you need to see how they are on a Sunday before the Monday comes around and you give your report to the manager as to whether they're fit or not. Lewis, what would you were going to say about the working hours?
I was just going to say that kind of approach of you're never really off is probably the number one reason why I've stayed away from professional sport at the moment anyway. I just think like that... I think that's probably being a bit self-aware, but I feel like the always on bit would be detrimental to me, you know, and that's not to say that I just, you know, I leave work and that's it, you just park it. But we have not a strict policy, but relatively sort of strict that you leave your work at the front door whenever you're leaving, like you don't take your work home. That's home is for home and work is for work type approach, and that's kind of well drummed into us. If it's, I'm trying to think something off the top of my head, but you know, say it's up to you to do the in-service for the next time, you know, that's kind of expected that you'll do that during your working hours when you can. That's not something to be done at home. And I quite like that because I feel like if I was in that environment where it's always on, I would be always on. You know, I would just be physioing all day, every day. And I quite like the disconnect of it. Now, that's not to say, you know, I definitely have a few patients, and it's probably more of a private thing because you've got such a range of people who come in. Like, I've got a couple of real top level athletes who probably do need that bit of personal touch on the side, that you know, you can give them a message or you can give them your phone number because you know they're not going to pester you with messages, but they can, you know, you're happy enough for them to drop you a line here and there particularly with some of the more complex cases. I know we're going to come on the caseload, but I don't mind giving out my number to a very particular type of person or a very particular type of athlete that you know they're not going to bother you, but it's beneficial for both of you to have that extra communication.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes complete sense. And like you said, in the sporting environment as well, they're probably going to be used to that more constant contact with a physio or sports therapist, aren't they? So, and then knowledge. I mean, it's a bit of a generalization, but their knowledge of their body is going to be better. So the questions they're asking aren't necessarily directly that in that way inclined or related. It's other things.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Shall we go on the case load? Yeah, let's go.
Yeah. Brad, do you want to go through your kind of caseload at the moment, sort of what it's like? First of all, how many you're seeing in a day, and then what's the complexity like with that? How often you spend, or how much time you spend with your patients?
So if we touch on where I am now, which is community in the centre of Bradford, it's only sort of 4 or 5 patients a day. So really on the lower end of that. Sort of what you'll see in a hospital, but complexity is very high. Obviously, Bradford's got a lot of socioeconomic deprivation, and it does show in the patients. There has been quite a lot of complex cases, and the social aspects of rehab have probably maybe shone through more than the actual therapeutic rehab. And I mean, I guess they're very interlinked, but trying to like build resilience with patients and setting actual meaningful goals to them rather than they just got ankle pain or something. I think in MSK it was very different, and it was sort of 12 to 15 patients a day in your typical shift, depending on if you had new patients or a lot of follow-ups. But yeah, I'd probably say lesser number but higher complexity at where I am at the moment.
And how long would you be spending with each patient?
So at the moment I get an hour for a patient. That's to include, so they say if I had a 1 o'clock, I'd probably start off at 12:45 to get there, see them for about 45 minutes, and then the next 15 minutes is getting to your next patient to start promptly at the next time. They do say I was supposed to do our notes in that time, but I think in the traffic in Bradford and moving around, I don't think it's really possible, so I think we all just do them sort of back at the office. It's pretty hard to get everything done in that short period of time, especially when you're looking at the whole social situation, and these people may not have the best health literacy, so you've got to explain things quite a lot and really understand and make it meaningful to them, so we're actually getting this rehab, the benefits they need, and they can actually engage with healthcare to kind of stop these long-term health outcomes being so poor. So it's been a good challenge in that aspect. But yeah, a lot more contact time, which I've enjoyed, to be honest. And you can plan it how you need. If somebody needs more time and it's really complex, you could easily just say, I'm going to spend 90 minutes with this person and really break through, which is quite nice.
And Connor, are you?
Again, I guess more of a pro, I would say, for working in sport, a varied caseload. Kind of unpredictable in terms of the number that you'd have or the type of injury you have. Obviously, given that it's football, you're more going to be lower limb. But only the other day there was an upper limb injury. So, for example, got a acromioclavicular joint sprain. So I guess, in terms of amount of time that you'd spend with a player, that also varies, because if you've got a different number of players, then the amount that you get allocated to you would differ. So if between the lads that are in the day, so your full-time ones, the 18s and 21s, you've got 8 players between the two squads. If you've got 2 members of full-time staff on, you take probably 4 each, or 3 and 5, for example. And then the complexity can be right through to a syndesmosis repair and dealing with that right from surgery. For example, we've got potential groin surgical repair, one that's had this injection that might then move to surgery if that fails. I guess really varied, and what I like about it is that you get to know the player very well. You're in with them every day. You're through on that journey with them, because you're helping them to try and win games and then them succeed, for example, and work as a team. So different in the sense that working in a clinic environment, you would have a set period with them and you would only see them perhaps once a week, for example. You're with these people every day, which is really nice, developing rapport, etc. So that's kind of a bit of a brief one on caseload for me. What's it like for you, Les?
Yeah, so kind of come back full circle. This is what I do like about sport, and that the amount of time you actually spend with each athlete. I would love to be able, like, you go through a full rehab session with that person. Maybe not every day, but regularly. It's not just you come and see them for a 40-minute appointment. So we have ours set for 40 minutes. Typical caseload in a week. To be honest with you, I was trying to kind of quantify it there. I actually haven't a clue how many I'd see in a week. It definitely is a bit seasonal. So at the moment it is pretty much the off season within the GA. So it's definitely quieter. I would probably see close to maybe about 40 a week, somewhere in that kind of region. So our day would be planned out. You've got an hour of rehab scheduled for every single day. And that kind of is split into 40 minutes that's set aside. And then the way the appointment slots work, there'll be a free 20 minutes somewhere in the day that you can do a little bit more rehab then. We have a team meeting that's an hour once a week, and then I have 2 hours of supervision. So I actually have quite a lot of time set aside that's non-clinical work. In terms of the complexity, probably a lot more similar to Connor's than Brad's, I'd say. I think because our clinic's predominantly sport, but you do definitely see a lot of your MSK stuff, you do vary from, your 55-year-old man or woman with lower back pain right the way up to really complex athletic hip and groin cases. Which is what I do love about sort of that more private clinic type environment, that it is definitely varied. And I sometimes feel like you're kind of having to change how you behave quite often. You know, if it's an athlete that's coming in, you're definitely a lot more, I don't really know how to describe it, but it's kind of almost like a mix of you two, in that, you know, you're working with you can be a lot more personable because it's an athlete that you might actually see a little bit more often than someone who comes in for one or two sessions for their lower back pain and you'll never see them again, where, you know, you can't have that real in-depth conversation because they maybe don't quite understand it in the same way. They don't have the same understanding for their body and how their body works and all that type of stuff. So I definitely find that the complexity is nearly in the type of person that's in front of you as opposed to the cases that are in front of you. But like, I've had some cases so far that are probably pushing me really to the nth degree for the level that I'm working at the moment, probably tipping over the edge of should I be doing it for the for the level that I'm qualified at. So like, I have a really complex rec fem tendon tear that is 7 or 8 weeks post-injury, but there was a lot of stuff going on with it and who he was and the level that he was playing at and the level that he was representing, and we had to get him seen by a surgeon in London, and there was just a lot going on with it. So you've got that on one end of the scale, and then on the other end of the scale, you know, you've got a farmer coming in with shoulder pain from lifting bales of hay, you know. That's kind of what my caseload's like.
Cool. Just to put on there, I didn't really say about MSK for the NHS. So new patients, you get that 40-minute slot, and follow-ups is that 30-minute slot, which is to see the full patient, assessment, rehab, and you finish your notes as well. So it's quite a short period of time. I think in private and sport, you both get to spend a lot more time with the patients and probably make some more meaningful. And that sort of like health literacy sort of thing that you mentioned there as well, Lewis, about knowing their own bodies and being aware of what medical conditions and how to treat themselves. I think in the NHS, you're not going to come across, you will come across it in some areas, but it's almost a surprise when somebody is pretty switched on.
Yeah.
I think what probably leads us on to another point is working with the MDT and consultants with the sort of patients that you work with. So we've all kind of mentioned surgery and working in a wider MDT. So Connor, in the football world, what's your MDT looking like?
Yeah, so in terms of full-time staff that you've got to lean on or assist in part of that team, you've got myself and two others at the moment. Obviously, this is going to differ from club to club and level to level. First team, obviously, have a physio, and then they have the head of medical, who are both very open with sharing and assisting with anything that's needed, which is fantastic, more than I could ask for. Sports science plays a huge role in football, in especially academy football. So we work with them quite closely in terms of end stage rehab. Depending on the level that you're working at, you'll have more or less of an input on the pitch based stuff. So currently I have a fair amount of input in the early stages, but if you were working kind of further down the levels, you would probably not have a sports scientist and you would take them all the way through to returning. Whereas in the higher levels, you would have a physio who, as soon as medically they would be clear, you probably wouldn't even take much of a pitch based. They would then be handed over to sports science and they would take the rest of it. So you would see less daylight in that sort of sense. And then I guess you've obviously got your coaches for the different age groups. You've got head of academy. I guess that's it. And then in terms of your consultants, obviously, typically each club, yeah, again, depending on the level, will have ties to a medical centre or consultants for different specialist areas. So we've got some really good contacts made by our head of medical. So we typically kind of go to him for direction on that. So the other day, for example, I was up in Leicester with a player seeing a consultant regarding a hip and groin injury. So someone who specialises in that field, because they were kind of failing physio. So that's when you would, you know, reach out to other parts of the MBT to help assist you with the treatment of that player. In terms of MDT and management, it would differ depending on the age and the level that the squad that they're in. So 18s and 21s, you're looking at more, you're dealing with them as an individual, and parents and own GPs don't come into it as much. Whereas with the younger age groups, it's always encouraged to go through GP and through that way, just because it's important that their care isn't taken off them completely before they're an adult, and that they do, their GP is still aware of things that go on. And obviously they're not a full-time footballer at that point. So it varies in that sort of sense. So yeah. What about you guys?
We probably take half of what you've just said there. We don't have a great deal of contact with coaches, which I don't want to say it bothers me, but it definitely agitates me something from time to time, because you want to get that message across about a player to the coach and you don't quite have that line of connection. We do work quite closely with quite a few consultants, so each of us have, and probably the level of experience, but each of us kind of have our own sort of knee consultant that we work with, own kind of shoulder consultant that we go to regularly enough. We'll actually come together and talk about the different consultants that we're working with, and sometimes we'll change it up based off of what someone else has said. So I went out of my way just before I started working to go up and have a day with Chris Conley, who's sort of the knee surgeon that I would use for all my knee injuries that I want to get seen, and I kind of just wanted to make that connection with him. I knew I'd be referring quite a few patients to him once I started working, so I had asked if it was possible if I could just spend the day with him, see what he does, the types of patients that he sees, what type of things he goes through with them, and just kind of build that connection up with him, which I actually think is really important and is probably something that doesn't quite get spoken about enough. So like sometimes I wouldn't have any issue in dropping his secretary a question just to pop to him to ask him, you know, about a patient that something's happened in rehab or something doesn't quite look right. You know, I don't necessarily feel the need to make an appointment to send my patient to him every time. He's quite willing to just answer the question on the spot. So yeah, we would generally have a bank of consultants that we would use. So you'd have your knee surgeon that you would go to, you'd have your neurosurgeon that you would go to, which at the moment I'm kind of flip-flopping between a few at the moment, just to kind of find the right one that I'm happy with. And that this is something that probably is different to your situation, Connor, in that I also have to remember that whenever I'm sending a patient to a consultant, they're also paying for a service with that consultant, and consultants aren't cheap. So I want to make sure that, yes, they're getting the best medical advice from that consultant, but that they're also getting the service that they're paying for. So yeah, we would have our own neuro kind of consultant. Then we would have our sort of sports medicine doctors, for the kind of more complexy, some of your patients with REDS, some of your patients who are maybe failing with corticosteroid injections into bursars and things like that. So yeah, we would have quite a good relationship with consultants. We actually sometimes invite some of them down to do a CPD day with us, just to go through some things that they're finding some of the things that they're finding within the population that they're seeing, so that we can kind of sign for that before we see them. Yeah, I really enjoy working sort of wider with the consultants. I find it fascinating. So like the guy that with the rec fem tear that I mentioned there a second ago, so his consultant's based in London. His initial consultation, the surgeon wanted me to sit in on it, because he's seen that there was more value in me providing him with the information that he was pulling apart from the referral that I had sent him. So I had sent him the referral with the subjective, objective, and the MRI report, and he was kind of probing me on that. And then we kind of sat down and discussed the plan that he wanted me to carry out while the patient was there. So it was a really good sort of conversation between the three of us, that it's not, you know, going from the consultant to the patient and the patient's referring, you know, relaying the information back to me. It was the three of us talking in tandem about what needed to be done, where we needed to be going with this. Not every surgeon will offer you that avenue, but I think it's good to just put your head out there, make yourself known to them, because they will definitely give more back to you that way.
Yeah, I think in the NHS, some similarities to what you said there, Lewis, but I think it really depends on where you are, with what consultants you're working, obviously, what sort of patients you're seeing. In an MSK setting, obviously, you're getting a lot of referrals from, say, the A&E doctors, if someone's had like a fall and a fracture, and that's what you're going to be reviewing. You get your post-op referrals, obviously the surgeon's done that. You might not have met the patient before and referred to the surgeon, but you'll then be, you'll get the referral from the surgeon, and most of them are happy to communicate things with you. Obviously, they've all got protocols in place that they co-design with the physios to make sure that we can run through it. So your senior physios will probably know more about that when they come together to make the protocols. But as a junior physio, you can email them if you have any questions. And I think another good thing about the NHS is similar to what you said, Lewis, is you can go spend time with them. Whether it's you go to their clinic or whether you go to their surgery, and I got the chance to do both of them in MSK, which is really good, where you can actually go and meet the people that are sending these referrals and see what they do on a day-to-day, which is really good. Like, see what actually happens in the operating room when you get somebody back and they've got a reverse shoulder replacement. Like, what does it look like? What you can understand why they're experiencing like this and the way the surgeons explain it, which is pretty good. Obviously, MDT-wise, the NHS has probably got the biggest MDT going. So it again depends on where you work. And if you're working on a ward, the MDT that you're going to experience is the medical team, the nurses, the like the OTs that you're working with. Speech and language might be involved. There could be all sorts of other teams, like the like I said, the diabetes team might be involved for this patient or something. So there's loads of people that you can work with. And if you have an interest in any of those areas, most of them will let you go and have a day out with them, which I think is really good. I think community, like I said earlier, the flexibility that it has is really, I really enjoyed that. So for some of my more complex patients, so one of them has a pacemaker, and used to be quite a big athlete. So now that's happened, they're kind of dealing with the psychological aspect that they're not as sporty as they were, and they need to get over this challenge and how can they get back into what they were doing. So I've been working with the patient, with their cardiologist, with their pacing clinic team, and because they're obviously struggling a little bit with this mentally, they've got a psychologist. So I've had like a three-way conversation, like you said, Lewis, that actually being there in the room and speaking to the patient and the other professional, I think there's so much value in that, and it's fantastic. Patients are not the best at relaying information from other healthcare professionals, and I think sometimes when you team up and you both kind of come together to get your point across, the patient can really understand what's going on. And when they see you all in tandem and agreeing, I think there's a lot to be said for that when they think they're getting a good level of care. So I think especially community allowing to use that MDT, obviously working very closely with OTs, but generally in the NHS there's such a big MDT that you can call upon, and if there's usually a specialist in something that you can get in touch with if you're having any problems, or say if you've got a neuro patient that comes through the door, there's a whole host of neurophysios that you can call upon for that experience to do joint visits with. So yeah, it's been really good in that aspect.
Cool. Should we talk about another really interesting part that actually when you hear it you think maybe not, but it's worth I think us mentioning it because of how different it is from being a student getting to a physio and then going into the real world, and that's level of admin. So and what admin involves and how it differs depending on what area of physio you're working in. So, Lewis, did you want to start by talking about what sort of bits and bobs you have to do on top of being a brilliant physio?
So, first out the bat, there is so much more admin to physio than just writing your notes. Like,
so much.
It is unquantifiable. So, typical day, admin-wise, so you, obviously you're writing all your notes for your patients. The next of admin is planning out your rehab. So that for us, that generally looks in two formats. So you've got probably your slightly more basic rehab we'd use PhysiTrack for, which takes a little bit less time because I would generally go through that with the patient, with them on the spot. And then the slightly more complex rehab that definitely takes more time to do would be the rehab we would do on Team Builder. So planning that, you're literally planning every single session between the day you see them to the next time that you see them, and that's factoring in. So like if I take an SCL, for example, an early stage SCL, you're having to put it on Team Builder, how long you're looking for them to ice for, you're splitting it up into their range of movement exercises, their reps and sets. Then you're going through their strength stuff, their reps and sets, and then how that's going to vary day to day, week to week. Other things that you're having to put in around that would be whether or not they're using something like a game ready, how long they're using that for, their walking, what cues you're looking for their walking. So it's a lot more detailed, but it's probably more valuable for me. It's certainly more enjoyable to plan because you're really having to think about what you're looking to get out of each specific session, and you can split the rehab into much more specific micro cycles for that week. So that's another piece of admin. The next one would be MRI referrals. Don't take that long to do, but they're an arduous process. So that's one thing. the caveat to that is then the time that you have to take to go through the MRI report, which isn't just as simple as just reading it and then doing whatever, you know, throwing it to one side. That will generally involve, not all the time, but often enough will then mean a referral to a specific consultant. So then you're having to go and find which consultant is relevant for that case, make the referral for that patient with that MRI report. The other bit of admin that takes up quite a bit of time is, so I do the tests and reports in the clinic. So we run an athlete profiling testing service and an athlete development sort of team testing service. So that would involve going through an Excel spreadsheet where we do a battery test. So, you know, using your force frame, Nord board, force dex, going through all the jumps and then going through the isokinetics, putting that into the spreadsheet, generating the workbook of that test and report, and then either sending it to the athlete, the athlete's physio, the athlete's coach. So yes, admin.
Make it sound so fun, Lewis.
There you go.
I think MSK we had 3 hours a week of admin, and if any patients didn't turn up, that was sort of admin. Like I said, our notes are expected to be done in our patient time, so not too much to be said there. But your admin would usually look at dictating letters to doctors, searching upcoming patients up, going through their medical notes and seeing what's required, reading through protocols and working out like what sort of exercise you're going to do at each one for the patient. Emails between different professionals. So if you're looking for help on a patient and you've emailed somebody, that communication or phone calls in that respect. And then, yeah, designing patients' rehab. So we used Rehab My Patient. So bringing pictures of and videos of exercises, sets and reps and how many days per week and stuff like that. So they could either get an email or printed out sheet depending on the age of the patient and if they're using technology. So yeah, I think admin, it felt like a lot, and you were always kind of looking forward to your admin because it was a little bit of time away from patients and you can get yourself caught up and feel like you're back on track, check your emails and stuff, but which I thought, I think there's a big difference in community. I will check my emails every day and I'm on the computer doing like managing my diary and stuff, whereas MSK, you're that rushed that you're checking your diary, you need to send that email, you need to dictate that letter, and you always feel like, oh, I need to finish that set of notes. So you're always kind of playing catch up in MSK, whereas in community, I feel there's lots to do, lots of admins and referrals and equipment orders and things to do, but I feel like I'm usually on top of everything that I've got to do with the admin time I've got, which has been quite nice.
Cool.
Connor,
so in terms of admin for me, obviously notes, that comes as a given being a physio, and don't underestimate the importance of those. At the end of the day, if you didn't write it down, it didn't happen, so you're making a medical record. Planning and testing is quite similar to what Lewis has mentioned, so obviously making sure you've got a clear plan of where you're going to go with that player during that week. Regardless of whether it goes to plan or not, you have to have an idea of what you're going to do. And then obviously you're testing, so your force frame, valved stuff, so using your Nord board force frame, that will generate data, which they will then have to collect and use that to inform what you're going to do next with them. So that's a task in itself. Things like daily availability. So on a Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, as I'm primarily responsible for YDP, I'll produce a availability report for coaches and managers to know who's going to be available for training and, you know, when they're likely to be back. Morning meetings will be happening in a morning for the full-time lads. So that'll be with, I guess, the whole MDT. So your analysts, your coaches, physios, heads of department, etc., to discuss not only medical but also the plan for the day and the schedule that and how it's going to run, because every day is different. Things like audit, so keeping a record of who's been injured, how long for, what type of injury, having that on a planner, which then we can generate percentage time out, trends on what type of injury and what percentage of time the, you know, teams have had that specific injury, etc. Helps us to inform kind of things going forward and show trends. Pre-season screening, that's always a big task at the start of the season, which normally spills into the season as well because of how big it is. So we produce PowerPoints with figures of angles of joints, but get pictures of them at the same time. And then obviously getting the medical documents sourced and uploaded to PMA, as that is what we use for the notes, etc. And then you've got things like individual reports, so producing season by season reports on how often that individual player has been injured, how often they've been injured, what the management was, and how they can sort of prevent it moving forward. Things like equipment checks in the daytime. So obviously we've spoken about sports trauma in the previous episode, but making sure that all that equipment is as you expect it and it's fit for purpose to go out to training pitch side. And then operations meetings, which happen on a Monday, which is talking about the, as it is, as it says on the can, so the operations, how everything is going to work out in that week and the following week, who's going to be the coach for the game, how they're getting there, if it's away or home, who the medical staff's going to be, timings for games, depart times, arrival times, all of that sort of thing. So as you can imagine, organising a football team, it is quite a big task. So it takes everyone to be involved and in the room to make sure that nothing, no stone goes unturned. So that's kind of a, I think that's a coverall basis. I don't think, I might have missed a few things, but that gives you a general idea of what sort of bits you're going to do on top of your general physio stuff.
As well as replying to all the players and messaging them
and that.
Stayed on your phone all the time, being always active.
I think, you know, like we're all in three very different jobs. And I think it just goes to show you the scale of admin that is probably in every single area of physio. And it's definitely not something that you get taught explicitly how to manage. But whenever you're being, whenever it's being rammed down your throat about time management at university, there is a there is a very explicit reason for that. It's for exactly what we're talking about here.
Yeah, 100%. I couldn't actually say that better myself.
Yeah, there is a lot to do, so that's why your timing needs to be on point.
It sounds all doom and gloom, doesn't it? But there's a purpose behind it. And it is important.
Some of the tasks do seem like a lot, but they are important. And so, especially when I was in MSK, I looked forward to having a bit of time away from patients. I think we were 85% clinical in MSK as band 5. So you're seeing a lot of patients. So that 3 hours of your 37 and a half week, it's really, really not that much. Whereas in community, it's been a way higher shift. And I'm not seeing 15 patients today. I'm seeing 4 or 5. There's been a lot more of admin and a lot of other tasks to do. But yeah, I think...
I also think that drives the quality of the service that you deliver up whenever you've actually got a little bit more admin time. So like whenever I'm talking about
100%.
Like talking about the length of time you have to rehab, you know, you virtually never produce your best work whenever someone comes in and you're basically doing it on the spot. Mm-hmm. Actually taking that time away and working it out to what adaptations you're looking, what's the best bang for your buck, you know, like how, you know, what exercise are you supersetting together for a very specific reason, when are you overloading something, you know, to the nth degree because you're really driving something, you know, like we were talking last week about slightly changing up how I was giving out some of my SCL rehab and, you know, taking one session a week where you're supersetting quads to just burn the life out of the quads because you can. You wouldn't have done it if you were thinking about it on the spot, you know. So yes, how we're talking about admin is if it's death or the
it's very important.
It is, yes.
I think that comes into preparation as well. I think in the NHS sometimes you don't really get time to prepare, especially in MSK, because your new patients will be on the day, and you just see the referral in the morning and you don't necessarily have time to plan something, or if it is something that needs you to go through the protocol and stuff, then you might get a bit of time in that session to do it. But yeah, I think preparation is a big key, and I think the more prepared you are, obviously, the more successful you are going to be.
Yep.
Just another quick note about Neonic. If you are in the Bradford or Shipley area and would like to get some help with an injury or long-term condition, and private physiotherapy is simply just not affordable for you, then Neonic may have the solution. Offering a free initial appointment and your subsequent 5 follow-up appointments only costing £20 total, Neonic offer an extremely affordable physiotherapy service. Don't worry, the price does not reflect the quality of care you will receive. The students are supervised by expert physiotherapy practitioners that have a wealth of experience from a range of different backgrounds. If you would like to find out more about the services Neonic offer, whether that's from a student or patient perspective, you can find out more at neonic.co.uk, and we'll leave the link in the show notes.
So that's it for episode 30 of the Talk on Physiotherapy podcast. You can catch us on our socials. So everything has now changed to @TalkinPhysio. So that's Twitter and Instagram. And then you can get us on Facebook @TalkinPhysiotherapy. Thank you very much for listening, and bye for now.